One Victoria believes our climate is changing, although we also believe that the threatened global catastrophe and extinction of life is not going to happen. A One Victoria majority government will take more effective action to help our environment more quickly with better results than any previous Australian state or federal government. We will completely decarbonise electricity production, remove all sources of pollution and vandalism, and assist all Victorians to prosper in spite of climate change by mitigating the impact of damaging weather events. Hello, and welcome to One Victoria's series of draft policies. Here we will present a positive alternative for all Victorians who would like to see a new, better state government in November 2026. Labor, the Liberal and National Party Coalition, the Greens and Independents have failed us for far too long, making poor decisions and wasting our money. While they focus on internal factions and hidden agendas, One Victoria's constitution will make you our only priority. Your safety, happiness, health, wealth and freedom will guide our every decision, every policy, every day. In this draft policy, we will discuss our environment. One Victoria believes that our climate is changing, and we believe that the Victorian government has a role to play in reducing activity that contributes to climate change and taking positive action to help our community live and prosper with the effects of climate change into the future. We also believe the Victorian government has an important role in working with the community to create a cleaner environment in all ways, creating a state that is completely free from all pollution, graffiti, litter and vandalism. One Victoria does not believe that climate change will result in the sort of catastrophic disaster many climate campaigners fear. Before COVID, Extinction Rebellion held a protest in Melbourne where a 17-year-old young man chained himself to the top of an A-frame ladder, blocking the entrance into the city off the Monash. When a journalist climbed up to interview him, he was crying. He explained that he had to do something to bring attention to a climate catastrophe that would occur within the next couple of years. The untainted evidence simply does not support that dire future. Since global warming / climate change became a thing, the public around the world has been encouraged to trust the science. From that moment, any scientists or members of the public who questioned the science has been branded as climate deniers and ridiculed. This was exactly the same treatment those who first suggested that the world was not flat and those who suggested the concept of evolution received. If the internet was a thing back then, no doubt these flat earth deniers and creation deniers would have felt the full brunt of today's cancel culture. As it was, they were criticised by their colleagues and excommunicated from their church. Yet they were eventually proven correct. Aggressive, systemic manipulation of public opinion has resulted in generations of our youth fearing the future and worrying unnecessarily about their role in it. H.L. Mencken was a famous American journalist, essayist, author, satirist, cultural critic and scholar of American English. He once observed, "The purpose of practical politics is to keep the electorate alarmed by a series of mostly imaginary hobgoblins so that they can be clamouring to be led to safety by a benevolent government." Every generation of the past 123 years has grown up facing manipulation, lies and pressure to follow the political priorities of government as well as influential elements of the business community, academic world and the press. Are the predictions of catastrophe in the near future justified? We do not think so. So if not, Why do you think governments pushed by the Greens and climate activists are pushing so hard? Do you think this pattern of moulding community opinion and behaviour has happened before? One Victoria thinks so. We love to label everything in our lives, none more obviously than when we group age ranges into the classic generation. Let's take a look. You might be surprised about how much we all have in common. From 1901 to 1927, the GI generation experienced World War I through to the start of World War II. Many very young men served and died on foreign soil. The governments of the day aggressively advertised to encourage these boys and young men to serve for Mother England and the glory of war. It was here that the spirit of Anzac was born. It was also here that the power of manipulating young minds became fully understood by those in government education and the press. From 1928 to 1945, the Silent Generation lost their childhood to the Great Depression, then signed up to fight as boys in the Second World War. Those that survived came home to short celebrations followed by a relentless message from governments that the communists are coming. Then the Korean War made them all believe it was coming true. Between 1946 and 1964, the baby boomers were born to the atomic age, which brought us the most terrible weapons ever known to human existence, and it also delivered extraordinary advances in medical technology and a way to generate abundant, safe, reliable baseload electricity. Television was a new thing, and newsreels at the theatres, together with the print media, were dominated with news of the war in Vietnam, atomic bombs, and predictions of the ultimate destruction of the human race. Governments found it useful to maintain these fears. Students held anti-Vietnam War protests. The late 60s was dominated by scientists warning of a new ice age and of global famine. Then, in 1975, right at the time when the last of the boomers were turning 18, we started to hear about this new message of impending doom, global warming. Gen X was born from 1965 to 1980. They grew up during the Cold War, the introduction of a thing called the Internet, and a ramping up of the idea that the world was dying due to global warming, pollution, the hole in the ozone layer, and the message was loud and clear. It was all our fault. Then, from 1981 to 1996, millennials, Gen Y children and teens saw the rise of the internet, social media, and the dramatic coverage of global warming as it morphed into climate change as many of the early predictions of gloom failed to materialise. Remember the Y2K bug? Predicting that as the clock struck midnight on New Year's morning 2000, computers all over the world would fail, bringing down aircraft, shutting down traffic lights and cancelling ship guidance systems, among many other horrors. The USA spent $200 billion, and across the world the cost would have been up to $1 trillion. How clever was that for the tech industries? Was it real? We will never know. Millennials' children were also the ones who were made to watch Al Gore's award-winning film An Inconvenient Truth, which was riddled with errors but brought climate change and, perhaps more importantly, pollution into focus. While Gore himself has lost credibility due to being called out for his anything but environmentalist lifestyle, he has apparently made a fortune taking advantage of government subsidies of renewables tech companies. His views became popular, and we began to see the mainstream press adopt the cause. Weather reports changed. Now, when the forecast is for rain, they say we will be smashed with a rain event. Whenever we have bushfires in this highly bushfire-prone area of the world, it is now caused by climate change, rather than bad forest management and poor fire management. Millennials hold leadership positions in business, media, and government. They are genuinely frightened for the future they believe may not exist, but they are also pushing for solutions that cannot work. 1997 to 2012 gave birth to Gen Z, the Zoomers. They have their whole life ahead of them. That 17-year-old protester I spoke about earlier is now in his early 20s. Zoomers have never experienced a life where the concept of climate catastrophe has not been forced upon them. Exaggerated weather reports, one-sided education systems, and a war between the extreme left and right side of politics. Gen Alpha are less than 10 years old now, yet they have already been taught to write protest letters to governments, that weather is potentially something to be feared, that having long showers is irresponsible, and cutting down a tree is evil. That's on the rest of us. It is important to review some of the inaccurately predicted consequences of global warming / climate change developed through scientific modelling by the very scientists that developed the whole concept. If we are encouraged to believe the science, then by default we must believe the modelling, right? Forecasts of melting ice caps to cause sea levels to rise by 3 metres, which has not come true, not even close. Massive increases in the frequency and severity of catastrophic weather events. Everything to do with the weather has become more aggressive and emphasised, but look at the examples below and make up your own mind. Global crop failures and resulting famine to kill millions. Not true. Never happened. On the ground, this meant more floods and coastal inundations, in some cases wiping out low-lying island nations, more droughts, more wildfires and more storms. The press of all types lapped this up because it sold newspapers, attracting viewing audiences, and when the internet came along, it generated clickbait. The fact that influences in that young ladder boy's life made him feel so desperate about the future is an absolute disgrace and says something about the depths faceless people will stoop to manipulate the current younger generation. Unreasoned panic driven by manipulation of public opinion by the press. Clever campaigning and global pressure from vested businesses and political interests. Exaggeration of normal weather events by weather forecasters. Extreme views adopted for the wrong reasons. These are all resulting in bad decisions being made by governments who are spending obscene amounts of money on the wrong things. We will address each of these points. Some examples of these bad decisions are aggressively moving away from fossil fuels to renewables for electricity generation without having viable replacement technologies in place. We are now seeing governments being held to ransom by huge renewables suppliers demanding ever-increasing tax concessions and subsidies, driving electricity prices ever higher. The complete absence of affordable backup storage solutions for a night time or when the wind does not blow. Go no further than an honest appraisal of the mess that Germany has got themselves into after spending more on renewables than any other country. Moves to cripple the oil industry without having an understanding of the consequences of doing so, all because of fears that not doing something will destroy the planet. All the while not taking adequate steps to mitigate against moderate changes to the climate that are happening around the globe. Meet Steve Gorham. On our website, onevictoria.com.au, we present a video presentation by Steve Gorham. Steve is a speaker, author, researcher on environmental issues, and an independent columnist. He's the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America, a non-political association dedicated to informing about the realities of climate science and energy economics. Steve gave this presentation at the Friends of Science event in Calgary on May 9th, 2017. He says, contrary to what your political leader, professor, and newspaper tell you, global warming is dominated by natural factors. Please be sure to watch the video, research Steve's claims, as well as comments we make in this policy, and make up your own mind. Let's take a look at how all of this translates to Victoria. Victoria has a long history of floods, droughts, storms and bushfires. As our population has grown, so too have the impacts on Victorians of these natural and cyclical events. Examples of floods. When Maribyrnong flooded in October 2022, residents were shocked and angry, seeking somebody to blame. The press blamed climate change. What many did not know was there have been 27 recorded floods in the Maribyrnong area since 1871. The major flooding events occurring like clockwork, approximately every 10 to 20 years. Following the last major event, the VRC was the only authority in the whole area to undertake mitigation works to protect the Flemington Racecourse when they built a flood wall in 2007. Last year, residents wanted to blame them for causing the floods, which a thorough inquiry found to be incorrect. When you purchase a residential property in Victoria, you are issued a Section 32 statement which would certainly have identified Maribyrnong as a flood-prone area. No property owner should have been surprised by what happened on October 2022. In August of that same year, 2 months before the most recent flood, the SES updated its local flood guide for Maribyrnong Township at Maribyrnong River. Here is a quote from that guide. The Maribyrnong River has a large upstream catchment and flooding can occur along the developed floodplain edges. The Maribyrnong Township can be severely impacted by riverine flooding. The increase in population density and the intensification of land use will result in increased flood risks. One Victoria is aware of proposals to build a flood mitigation dam upstream from Maribyrnong to protect the area and surrounding suburbs, yet that proposal did not suit the agenda of the Greens and extreme elements of climate and environmental activists, so it has never been built. Here are some early flooding events that have affected Melbourne and Victoria. 1863, major flooding drowned Port Melbourne and killed one person at Princes Bridge. 1880, Yarra River rises to 305 metres width, the most significant flood in Melbourne's history. 1882, Elizabeth Street flooded. 1934, 350 millimetres of rain causes extensive flooding, killing 35 people. 1954, Elwood to Flemington flooded. 1972, cars float down Elizabeth Street following a cloudburst. 1977, Laverton hit with 153 millimetres over 4 hours. 1984, 100 eastern suburbs homes flooded by storm. 1999, Broadmeadows flooded by flash floods. 2010, widespread damage flooding across Melbourne and western and central Victoria. 2011, flash flooding in Croydon and Frankston. Examples of droughts. The Bureau of Meteorology, or BOM, has released a document which discusses droughts across Australia. It lists the following major droughts events. The Federation drought, stretching from 1895 to 1902. The 1914 to 1915 drought. The World War II drought, 1937 to 1945. The 1965 to 1968 drought, the 1982 to 1983 drought, the Millennium drought, 1997 to 2009, the 2017 to 2019 drought. Many of these droughts can be tracked to coincide with the cyclical occurrence of El Nino, a known weather phenomenon which brings long periods of hot, dry weather. We are at the beginning of the most recent El Nino, with an expectation of drought conditions possibly developing over the next few years. Sea levels predicted to rise. I remember the predictions that sea levels would rise catastrophically, caused by melting glaciers by more than 3 metres, and would swamp low-lying nations like the Maldives by 1990. New maps of the world were drawn and shown in the press showing decimated coastal communities. In fact, sea level rises can be measured in millimetres, much less than 3 metres predicted. To our knowledge, no community displacement has been caused anywhere in the world due to sea level rises alone. And the idyllic Maldives? Still looking good in 2023. Fun fact, number one. Apparently, sea levels around the Maldives have in fact risen by 11 millimetres in the 30 years as at 2020. The hot prediction now is some low-lying sandbars, presently just visible at low tide, may be permanently submerged by the end of this century. Fun fact number two. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been gifted to the Maldives from the international community to facilitate, I quote, a combination of adaptation and mitigation as well as loss and damage reparations. The Maldives government has even appointed a special minister to manage all of the international climate adaptation and mitigation funding. Some might say money for nothing. Thanks very much. Examples of bushfires. When bushfires burned large swathes of New South Wales and northeastern Victoria in 2020, younger generations saw it as an example of climate change. Whipped up by cheap political tactics from the Greens, they saw this as the proof they needed that drastic action was needed to stop climate change. I recall when the Royal Commission into the 2020 fires in New South Wales and Northern Victoria released their report, the ABC reporter announced the release, declaring that the Commission had failed to lay the blame for the fires at climate change. What they did not cover was the fact that the Royal Commission, independent of government bias, set out virtually the same issues that an earlier Royal Commission found to be the core problems with the 1939 Black Friday fires. Poor communications between government departments, poor forest fuel management on public and private land, lack of fire breaks on fence lines and road verges, poor maintenance of private properties, and poor emergency communications. Let's look at the facts. Here is a list of major bushfire events in Victoria. 1851, Black Thursday, 5 million hectares and 12 deaths. 1898, Red Tuesday, 260,000 hectares and 12 deaths. Early 1900s, widespread fires were reported in 1905/6, 1912, 1914, and 1919. 1926, significant fires across Gippsland with 60 deaths, plus intense fires in Warburton with 31 deaths. 1932, fires across Victoria with 9 deaths. 1938/9, Black Friday, 1.5 to 2 million hectares burnt, 71 deaths. Areas affected included Noogee, Woods Point, Omeo, Warrandyte, Yarra Glen, Warburton, Erica, Rubicon, Dromana, Mansfield, the Otways and the Grampians. 1942, Gippsland, 1 death. 1943, hundreds of hectares of grassland around Wangaratta killed 10 people. 1944, 1 million hectares, 20 people died. 1952, 100,000 hectares near Benalla. There were several deaths, no specific count. 1962, across the Dandenongs, the Basin, Christmas Hills, Kinglake, St Andrews, Hurstbridge, Warrandyte and Mitcham, and 32 people lost their lives. 1965, 315,000 hectares, 7 deaths. 1969, 280 separate fires, 250,000 hectares and 23 people died. 1972, Mount Buffalo, 12,000 hectares. 1977, the Western Districts, 103,000 hectares. 1980/1, 119,000 hectares burnt. 1983, this was including Ash Wednesday, 468,000 hectares burnt and there were 47 deaths. 1985, 102,000 hectares, 3 deaths. 1997, 5 major fires, including the Dandenongs, where 400 hectares burned, taking 3 lives. 1998, 64,000 hectares. 2001, 181,400 hectares. 2003, 1,300,000 hectares over 59 days, joined to firm the largest fire since 1939. 2005/6, 160,000 hectares and 4 fatalities. 2006/7, 1,200,000 hectares, 1 death. 2009, Black Saturday, 430,000 hectares, 173 people lost their lives. 2013, 5 deaths, including tragically 4 firefighters. 2015, 3,000 hectares. And 2019-20, 1,500,000 hectares and 5 fatalities. Climate change? Maybe. Can we be sure? You decide. You can be absolutely certain of this one thing. These events will continue to happen, regardless of steps taken to reduce CO2 emissions into the atmosphere. And it remains the absolute responsibility of governments and every individual to take the required steps to mitigate the effects of these events on all Victorians. We ask that you take the time to consider the following points and our proposed environmental policies detailed in our website onevictoria.com.au, as well as these podcasts before you decide if you agree or not. Want to hear some good news? It might seem there is nothing but bad news on the climate front with all this talk of climate catastrophe, future famine, millions dying, ecosystems imploding, and the extinction of the human race. While all this has been in the press and taught at schools and universities all over the world, there has been examples of good news that no one has been taught in educational institutions or seen spoken about in the media. Here are just 3 examples. Number 1. There are less truly poor people now than 50 years ago. Less starvation, less famine, less poverty. Number 2. In the first half of the 20th century, India was constantly experiencing famine and very high death rates from starvation and malnutrition. Then their population was around 300 million. Today, with a population of 1.3 billion, they not only feed their population well, but they are net exporters of food to the world. Number 3. Did you know that the world is greener than 30 years ago? The following article speaks about a 14% greening. I have seen articles from NASA saying the figure is 5% and heard eminent climate scholars putting greening at more than 30%. Each use different timescales, but the effect is undeniable. This was published July 8, 2019 by Matt Ridley. Rejoice, the earth is becoming greener. The greening of the earth means more food for animals and greater crop yields for humans. Amid all the talk of an imminent planetary catastrophe caused by emissions of carbon dioxide, another fact is often ignored. Global greening is happening faster than climate change. The amount of vegetation growing on the earth has been increasing every year for at least 30 years. The evidence comes from the growth rate of plants and from satellite data. In 2016, a paper was published by 32 authors from 24 institutions in 8 countries that analysed satellite data and concluded that there had been a roughly 14% increase in green vegetation over 30 years. The study attributed 70% of this increase to the extra carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The lead author on the study, Mr. Zhu of Beijing University, says this is equivalent to adding a new continent of green vegetation twice the size of the mainland United States. Global greening has affected all ecosystems, from Arctic tundra to coral reefs to plankton to tropical rainforests, but shows up most strongly in arid areas like the Sahel region of Africa, where desertification has largely now reversed. This is because plants lose less water in the process of absorbing carbon dioxide if the concentration of carbon dioxide is higher. Ecosystems and farms will be less water stressed at the end of this century than they are today during periods of low rainfall. There should have been no surprise about this news. Thousands of experiments have been conducted over many years in which levels of CO2 have been increased over crops or wild ecosystems and boosted their growth. The owners of commercial greenhouses usually pump CO2 into the air to speed up the growth of plants, because CO2 is plant food. This greening is good news. It means more food for insects and deer, for elephants and mice, for fish and whales. It means higher yields for farmers. Indeed, the effect was probably added about $3 trillion to farm incomes over the last 30 years. So less land is needed to feed the human population, and more can be spared for wildlife instead. Yet this never gets mentioned. In their desperation to keep the fear-mongering on track, the activists who make a living off the climate change scare do their best to ignore this inconvenient truth. When they cannot avoid the subject, they say that greening is a temporary phenomenon that will surely reverse in the latter part of this century. The evidence for this claim comes from a few models fed with extreme assumptions, so it cannot be trusted. This biological phenomenon can also help to explain the coming and going of ice ages. It has always been a puzzle that ice ages grow gradually colder for tens of thousands of years, then suddenly warmer again in the space of a few thousand years, at which point the huge ice caps of Eurasia and North America collapse, and the world enters a warmer interlude, such as the one we have been enjoying for 10,000 years. Attempts to explain this cyclical pattern have mostly failed so far. Carbon dioxide levels track the change, but these rise after the world starts to warm and fall after the world starts to cool. So they are not the cause. Changes in the shape of the Earth's orbit play a role, with ice sheets collapsing when the northern summers are especially warm, but only some of these so-called great summers result in deglaciation. Recent ice cores from the Antarctic appear to have fingered the culprit at last. It's all about plants. During ice ages, the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere steadily drops because colder oceans absorb more of the gas. Eventually, it reaches such a low level, about 0.18%, at the peak of the last ice age, that plants struggle to grow at all, especially in dry areas or at high altitudes. As a result, gigantic dust storms blanket the entire planet, reaching even Antarctica, where the amount of dust in the ice spikes dramatically upwards. These dust storms blacken the northern ice sheets in particular, making them highly vulnerable to rapid melting when the next great summer arrives. The Ice Age was a horrible time to be alive, even in the tropics. Cold, dry, dusty, and far less plant life than today. As Svante Arrhenius, the Swede who first measured the greenhouse effect, said, by the influence of the increasing percentage of carbonic acid, carbon monoxide, in the atmosphere, we may hope to enjoy ages with more equable and better climates. I bet you never heard that quoted. Enjoy the lush greening of the current world, and enjoy the fact that green vegetation is changing faster than global average temperatures. The author Matt Ridley is a scientist, journalist, and businessman. He is a board member of humanprogress.org. A One Victoria majority government in 2026, through all our policies as well as the following environment policies, will deliver solutions to our climate challenge and the promise of a future we can all be proud of. If all the generations can work together to overcome the negative influences of government, business, academia, and vested interests pressure groups around us, all of us can lead the world in proving that we can win the battle against climate change and pollution in a realistic and practical way, while actually taking advantage of the many positives that One Victoria's strategies can deliver to all Victorians. These include a strong and growing economy, reduced cost of living, and a positive influence for our children so they can see that their future is good. One Victoria would like to place the following caveat here regarding our environment policy. The days of governments driven by political extremists and idealists, placing the interests of a butterfly, beetle, or some other species ahead of the safety, health, happiness, wealth, and freedom of the Victorian community as a whole, will end when a One Victoria majority government is elected in 2026. While we will always be sensitive to our natural world around us, and you will see how progressive and effective our policies will be to clean up our state and to rid it of pollution, vandalism, greenhouse gas emissions, and antisocial behaviour, we place humans, the members of our human community, first, always. 1 billion seconds. There are a number of references to hundreds of billions and trillions in this report. People do not have a strong understanding of how much bigger $1 billion is than 1 million. When asked off the cuff, most say 10 or 100 times bigger. The correct answer is 1,000. Here's a new way of presenting this equation. Consider 1 million seconds. It adds up to about 11.6 days, a week and a half. 1 billion seconds is 31 and a half years. 1 trillion seconds is 31,500 years. Please join us for part two, where we will discuss our draft environmental policies concerning electricity and gas. Then in part three, we will present all our other environment policies. One Victoria, we place Victorians' safety, happiness, health, wealth, and freedom first, every day, in every way, always. Your ideas are welcome. Please contact us. Let us know what you think and contribute to the development of our final environment policy. Send us an email at environment@onevictoria.com.au. Until then, goodbye, stay safe, keep well. Authorised by Kenneth Noonan, One Victoria, Suite 582, Waterman Caribbean Park, 44 Lakeview Drive, Scoresby, Victoria 3179. Our website, onevictoria.com.au. Our mobile, 0421 484 115. Email kennethn@onevictoria.com.au. One Victoria and onevictoria.com.au are registered under ABN 23 124 908 499.